first things first, it is Friday. I'm Jen Wolf, that's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is not Nick Wright, nor is that Special Joint Forces. Today we are joined by NBA champ Antoine Walker and WNBA champ Swin Cash. To get us started, it takes a village.
Would your girl Beyonce say upgrading? Okay, this is what I did, okay?
We got a big show, a dose of basketball, a dose of football, the Cowboys shoring up their defensive line. Mm-hmm. Huge injury to the front runner for MVP in the NBA, but we kick things off with the Philadelphia 76ers. Big win for them at home last night over the Nets, thanks in very large part to a big night out of Joel Embiid. 39 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals in only 28 minutes of play. Boy, imagine if he played 29. Sixers will take the win over a team they could very well face in the playoffs. After the game, Joel Embiid said, "We're trying to win a championship." See, we talk about Joel Embiid a lot, but coming down this stretch here, what's the most impressive part of Embiid's game?
Well, I think it's very impressive because he was injured at the All-Star break, the wear and tear. Kind of, they gave him a break. He missed 8 games there. In those games, they were 4-4. So I think in coming back for the stretch drive, and Philadelphia's done a great job. They got a lot of criticism as far as the guys who they drafted being injured, but how they nursed him back, because I believe that he's beyond having that injury bug being on him. But there are certain times, regardless of what your resume is, that you need to be able to give a guy a break. And for a young player like himself to be like, no, I'm not going to force myself to be out there, the organization to be on top of that, and to give him the type of rest that he could finish with the type of force that you need, a big five, they are a rarity. For a big man to be able to operate not only inside the paint, but be able to bring you out to the three-point line, I believe he's a breath of fresh air, not only on the court, but off the court. I believe he's going to be the face of the NBA. Because of his personality, because of his overall game, and the surrounding pieces that they've put around him, it seems like the Jimmy Butler, the trade is working. Tobias Harris, it's working. So those things collectively, I could say after that 8-game break, how he is going to finish the regular season has been very impressive to me.
Yeah, and Antoine, you know this as much as anybody. In this new NBA, we hear load management. Everybody has load management, whether it's Embiid, whether you're going up to Toronto and what they've been doing up there with Kawhi. But for Embiid, I think they've done it right, Chris. I think they have taken their time. They made sure that he gives them maximum effort but lower minutes. And when he comes out and plays, you get dominating for performance like he did tonight. But keep this in mind, guys. His performance, like Embiid's 25. Like what we're seeing right now, the numbers he's putting up, it's the new era of the NBA where the fives can step out. They can shoot the three. They can be down low. But I think he's right. They're going for a championship this year. I remember seeing Elton Brand before the trades happened and just saying, you know, what's going on with the team? What are you guys thinking about? And I knew something was going to happen, but getting Tobias Harris, I think, is that extra piece that can put them in position to get through this
I think when you look at last night, is the way they have to play. I think that's more important. I know Joel Embiid played terrific, but the Sixers to win the championship, and I love the fact that he talked about we're trying to win a championship, but they got to play inside to out, and you don't see that a lot with a lot of NBA teams. You got to feature him. He's got to be the guy getting 20, 25 shots a night. Then everybody else kind of piece it together. You got a great point guard, I think, in Ben Simmons, but then Jimmy Butler, I think, has finally fit his role. Let me defend. Let me be the guy that takes the shots late in the game, the end of the game. We all know what J.J. Redick can do from the 3-point line, and then Tobias Harris gives us their stability. But the one thing about the Sixers, I would wish they come out and put one of those guys in the lineup, take them out the lineup early, so you can get that bench better. You have to get that bench a lot better come playoff time. But they got all the ingredients and pieces. But if they play the way they played last night, everybody getting double-digit shots, but Embiid being the feature, you know, no question how far this team can go, because they got the second-best starting five in the league behind Golden State.
Yeah, nice.
But do you think they rely on Joel Embiid almost to their detriment? I mean, do you think that this team lives and dies by the way Joel Embiid plays every night, and will that hold them back come the playoffs?
Well, I think as an organization, when you have a player like him, you need to establish something. And the foundation of their basketball should be Joel Embiid. And it's just not because he's a 7-footer. It's because of his skill set. I believe he also is a very effective leader. Man, he's very personable. You see him always talking on the court to the other players. So I don't think you can rely on a guy who has a complete game. He's got an intermediate game. He can pull up. You talked about earlier about being able to come out to the three-point line, and we know that he has a devastating inside game. So I don't think, and if you look at the the skill set of the other guys around him, what they do. Jimmy Butler, like, he is better. First three quarters, being a defender, being a slasher, and then at the end of the game, after you fed Joel Embiid, you've gotten all these fouls on him, on the opposition, then you allow Jimmy Butler to be able to close them out. So, no, Jenna, I believe that everything starts and ends with Joel Embiid, and I believe that was part of their struggle earlier, trying to find identity, what we're going to do. Let's pump it into the paint, allow the big man to go to work. That's the way the NBA used to be. Man, we're going to give it to the big man, let him work, and then everyone else get theirs off of that.
Well, he's a star player, so you have to go through him first. And I think that's rightfully so. He had six assists last night. Four of those assists were to Ben Simmons because they have guys that are used to playing without the ball. Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, they don't need the ball in their hand consistently to be able to produce. And so Embiid is a really good passer to be a big man, and that's what's happening. Even at Golden State, you see Boogie Cousins, a great guy with big hands. Draymond Green, another big that has great hands. That's where the NBA is right now, and Embiid has all the tools that you have to go through him, and then you feed the other guys off that.
And they're good enough, too, just to add to that, is that we know they're probably not going to finish with the first or second seed. But being at the third seed, it's a good spot for them. They got good home crowd, have some home court advantage. They're going to play great in Philly. But you got to add, only thing I worry about them is Brent Brown making the proper adjustments that's needed throughout the playoffs. We saw some mistakes last year in the playoffs.
Yes.
Making the right adjustments to make sure that they don't beat themselves, because they're talented enough to go as far as they want to go in the Eastern Conference.
So that's an interesting point. What I was going to ask you, Swin, if they don't make it to the end of the Eastern Conference, what will be the reason why? I mean, what will you point to and say, well, that's where their demise was with this team that Antoine, you think is the best team in the East?
I think Antoine made a good point. I think right now, I think the organization, the ownership, has went all in on this team. This team will not be the same team next year. I would be
this
surprised
starting five.
If this starting five is the same starting five next year. They're going to have to sign some guys. I don't know if Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris will both be there. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. If they beat themselves and then also the bench, I like Boban to be on their bench. I think he's going to add some size on the inside, and that trade with Tobias Harris is going to be good for them. But then you're going to need other guys. You're going to need Scott to come out. You're going to need also Johnson. Those guys to not only defend but to make open shots. Because if I'm scheming in a seven-game series, I'm going to take some things away. Who are the other guys that are going to step up, be role players to have those moments?
Well, we talk about, and you bring this up all the time, Ben Simmons has to be one of those those guys. But he talks about his limitations all the time shooting. How much are they going to need a little bit more from Ben Simmons in that regard?
Well, I think he has to play smart. He has some deficiencies shooting the basketball. So they know that. They're going to have to put him in position where he can be effective. That may be him posting up a little bit more, playing off his skill set, which is a guy that can slash, cut to the basket, finish around the basket. But I'm not worried about Ben. I think last year taught him a lot. Understand that they're going to sag. He's going to be the one, the weak link on the offensive end. But they also can go small, too, and play another guy. You know, obviously, Ben Simmons is your all-star, but they have some other pieces now. She talked about the bench. You can bring in a T.J. McCollum, a guy who can make some shots, who can stress the defense a little bit. So they have all the ingredients there to be a great team. It's going to be up to them. They're going to beat themselves. And just to add to that, I think it is championship or bust, or this roster changes immediately in the offseason.
No, Jenna, you make a great point. If you're talking about Philadelphia, why might they not get there? Why aren't they Eastern Conference champions? There's a couple of things. Ben Simmons, out of 505 shots this season, only 13 outside the painted area that he's been able to make. So in the playoffs, we saw last year, people sagging off of him. I believe it's very important, too, for Brett Brown to be able to get them in set, especially early in the game. Don't try to run a half-court offense. Get him going with pace, because it's easier before the defense sets up that he can get a better look than in a half-court defense. And on the defensive side of things, we know Philadelphia is a suffocating defense. But how can they hide J.J. Redick? Because teams try to find him out, try to find that matchup in there. We know he's a knockdown shooter, but a deficiency on the defensive side. So Ben Simmons shooting the basketball, shooting it from any type of distance, or how's he going to generate offense before he gets impatient? And J.J. Redick trying to hide him on the defensive
side. Just so I'm clear, we have to hide J.J. Redick on defense and hide Ben Simmons on offense. My kids would be amazing at putting this 76ers. If this is about hide and seek, call my kids. They'll put this.
Yeah, they might be professional, but they got deficient.
Swin and Cash, we'll see you guys. Swin and Cash. Swin and Twan. Antoine. This is my problem when I give people nicknames. We'll see you guys a little bit later on. Take a break. Coming up, hey, why does Antonio Brown have the rest of the league nervous? That's next on FS1. And you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on Sirius XM. We'll be right back. Back here. here with Eric Mangini and Brian Westbrook. We'll get to them and Antonio Brown in a second. But first, Sixers, Nets. Joel Embiid throwing the lob up to Ben Simmons for the one-handed slam.
Oh, it's going to be a problem. He's right in his range, though. He's right in a restricted area.
That's the only place he can shoot.
He likes a two-pro.
Kings and Pelicans. De'Aaron Fox drops a dime to Willie Cauley-Stein before throwing it down on Jahlil Okafor.
I see Willie Cauley-Stein making a guest appearance. Man, I ain't seen you since Kentucky.
Watch your head.
Oh!
There it is.
All right, moving on. Little Nuggets and Rockets from last night. Jamal Murray, watch this, drives, loses the dribble, makes the one-handed acrobatic shot.
Now, see, that's what happened. Nice. You make fun of a Kentucky player, the next one, another Kentucky player makes a ridiculous shot.
Yeah, there you go.
And I got another Kentucky player on the show today. It's a Big Blue Nation. They play tonight.
A whole bunch of them.
Those are the only type of shots I can make.
NCAA, Sweet 16, Texas Tech beating up on Michigan, helped in part by Tariq Owens skying for a twisted alley-oopsie.
Yeah, not the most offensive game you would ever want to see.
Out of Michigan, 44 points last night for them.
Michigan had a great season, didn't play that way last night. Got to give Tech a lot of credit. Some good athletes played some suffocating defense.
All right, let's move on to a little football. Antonio Brown, the former Steeler, orchestrated quite an exit out of Pittsburgh last week. Not only did he have 3 years left on his deal when he was traded to Oakland, he also got himself a new contract. According to reports, some executives around the league are worried about the precedent this sets. Hey, if he could do it, couldn't others? See, I'll start with you. Are NFL executives right to be concerned about this move?
Well, I think NFL executives are always looking to see what's going to be the next trend. And with the salary cap, right now, $188.2 million. And if I'm sitting there as a veteran player, if I'm one of the best at my position, I don't have guaranteed money. The landscape of pro football has changed. Because I know the organization, if you have a bad year and you don't have guaranteed money, there's a possibility they can come to you before the season, being like, after free agency, you know, I don't think that you're worth being one of the top five at your position. We want you to take a salary reduction. They have the right to do that. So what is the player's recourse in that? They don't have anything. Now, I wouldn't be worried about players having the resume that Antonio has. The stretch that he's been on the last 6 to 8 years, that's going to be hard to duplicate. So you're always at this, who's willing to take a chance? So there's not enough players that have a strong enough resume, and there's not enough players that have the guts and the agent of Drew Rosenhaus, because it takes some guts to be able to walk out on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, it takes some guts. And most guys, they aren't willing to take those types of chances. So, yes, I think they should be aware of things like that, because with the salary cap, if you decide I want to exit this team, you only need one team to fall in love with you. And we know in the NFL, regardless of what your resume is, regardless, you might have a police record, you might have a checkered past, one team will take that chance on you. So if I'm a general manager and I don't have guaranteed money on some of my star players or my upper echelon players, I would be concerned that they might try to force themselves out, Coach.
Well, yeah, it doesn't. It only really applies to the best players. You have to be Antonio Brown. You have to be in a situation where you can say, I'm one of the best at my position, top two or three at my position. So it doesn't apply to everyone. I wouldn't be as concerned for that. If I'm a GM of a football team, I would be more concerned with guys saying, you signed a five-year contract, it's year two or three, and now I want more money. That's what I would be concerned with if I'm a GM, because
wouldn't only the upper echelon guys warrant that or be able to walk into a GM's office and ask for that?
Well, you don't have to be the best at your position to do that, but you have to be valuable to the team. If you're valuable to the team and you're still not the best at your position, you can still walk into that GM's office and say, hey, without me, this is what this team is. With me, I can produce. This team can be great. Without him, Antonio Brown, in this case, they couldn't win.
And typically, guys forget about their signing bonus. So they get the signing bonus. That's supposed to be prorated. They're supposed to look at that as part of the...
What is that, Coach?
Once they get paid...
You're right.
that money, it's like it never existed. It's all about new money. And guys think, I should be getting new money that's consistent with the market that shifted since I signed my deal. And it's not realistic. It's not how it works. Now, with Antonio Brown's situation, I was really surprised at Pittsburgh made the move that they did, because they took a hard line with Le'Veon Bell. And organizationally, they typically take a very hard line. And to some degree, you have to. Because if you allow that to happen, then someone else is going to try it. And until you take that stand and say, it's not going to happen here, then you're always at risk for people pushing like
what
that.
What was the hard line? Was it, hey, guess what? We'll fine you every time you want to sit out. Just stay. We're not going to. Would the hard line have been just keeping Antonio Brown there?
The hard line was, if I don't get the type of deal that is a blockbuster deal, this is your home. You don't have another option. Unless you want to retire from football. I saw his house on there on Instagram Live. I saw those houses. He said it's paid for, but you need more money to stay functionably being able to do the things he wants to do. So he wouldn't have had a recourse. Him and his agent would have had to make a decision in late August. That's what it comes down to. Are we going to play or are we going to sit out? And you're right. If the Pittsburgh Steelers had done that, what would they have been able to, what would the Brown and his agent Drew Rosenhaus been able to do? They wouldn't have anything to do but either sit out in this career or come back and play for the Pittsburgh Steelers under the current deal.
And I got the sense that, or the feeling I have is that they want to take a fresh start. They want to move on from all of this drama, and they were willing to sacrifice and not.
Because they didn't get the blockbuster deal from Oakland.
They didn't get anything near what his value is. But they're committing to Ben Roethlisberger. They know that he can continue to,
right,
to lead them. And their thought process is, let's move on from this issue and go forward.
If you're the Steelers, you also know we've had a lot of success at drafting wide receivers, finding wide receivers, and we have Juju right there waiting in the wings. Mm-hmm. So if there was a situation where the team is better without Antonio Brown, not on the field but in the locker room, and we could bring this thing together behind Juju being our lead receiver, then we'll take that chance. I think that's what Pittsburgh had to think about.
Steelers are basically wide receiver and running back light. Like, they have James Conner instead of LaBelle. They have Juju. But what about this idea, Coach, and this is a big thing for you, of a guy, you look at a team like the Steelers, and they had a guy who was disgruntled and wanted out, and he got out. Doesn't that set a bad precedent for your new team and the new sort of environment that you're creating there?
Yeah, it does. But you've got to look at the whole. You got to weigh the two against each other, keeping them, the disruption that that's going to create versus the precedent. And there is a commitment to Ben. And Ben is a force multiplier. And Ben has won on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. And Ben has shown that he can take those six-round wide receivers or guys that have a developing skill set and make them a lot better. So at the end of the day, their thought process to me was, let's make the quarterback happy. Mm-hmm. He'll be able to push us forward. And we'll cut our losses on Brown.
From my perspective, I look at the next 6 months to be very critical for Mike Tomlin and what he's doing there in Pittsburgh. Because he's got to reestablish the culture there in that locker room. They've made an outward saying, Ben is going to be our leader. Coach Tomlin has supported him. But in doing this and trying to rebuild this faith with the team, if I was Coach Tomlin, the first guy who made a mistake, it wouldn't have to be a big one. I'm going to make an example of him. A guy gets arrested or something, I'm going to cut him, guy. I'm going to cut a guy they don't think him so I can reestablish who's in control of that organization. I believe it's very important what they've been through with LaBelle last couple years with that franchise tag, AB shooting himself out, not showing up the last week of the season. The next guy who would do something, if I'm Tomlin, I believe that would send the type of message of being like, wow, this is the way the Pittsburgh used to deal
but
with the
player. But what if that next guy is Ben Roethlisberger? What if it's him calling someone out on the radio? What if it's, do you do the same thing with him? Because he's now, you got rid of the other two guys. You have Roethlisberger
left. Well, this is the thing. I can't make it. I've already told the story with Ben Roethlisberger. We're riding him to the end of this, Coach. That's why we're giving him. We're making him. But we're also talking to him, Ben, like, Ben, we need you to be the type of example. Tomlin mentioned it. After a 9-6-1 season, everyone in this organization, from the Rooneys, general manager, myself, and all the players, need to look at themselves because this is not the product that we want to put out there. Now, if Ben happens to do something, Listen, if you pay your leaders and your leaders are bad leaders and they get into trouble, then your organization is there's nothing. You can't win with that. So you can't expect Ben to be the one. But I'm expecting to make an example of someone in that locker room.
Well, guys have to understand that. I think this is what you're saying. The culture has to override everything. You see it in great places like New England. The culture overrides a player's individuality. At this point, he has to reestablish that. And I think Mike Tomlin, the guy that I know, he can reestablish that. He can go out there and do it. It's going to take some buy-in from his quarterback. His quarterback's going to have to rally the troops. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a huge thing.
And there's a couple ways to do it. There's the way that Chris is advocating, and there's a lot of value to that. You have a high-profile message sent from the head coach, and it reverberates throughout the locker room. And the second thing is you can pay someone that you feel is exemplifies the things that you value.
Yeah, what they did with Pouncey and what they did with Foster, the offensive lineman.
Because
right?
No matter how much you say he's our leader, whoever you pay a lot of money to, That's what the group says you value as an organization. Mm-hmm. So if they commit to the right type of guys that really feel supports what they believe in, that sends a message to the locker room as well.
All right, you guys stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up, the NBA MVP races go down to the wire. That is next on First Things First. On Sunday, NASCAR heads to Texas Motor Speedway, where Kyle Busch looks to continue his hot start. It is all Sunday at 3 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. It is time for us to go viral here on First Things First. So Manu Ginobili spent his entire 16-year career with the Spurs. He won 4 titles. Last night, the team retired his jersey. It was an emotional ceremony. One of his closest teammates, Tim Duncan, spoke about his first memory of Manu.
I got that call from Pop. Every year I watch the draft. I sit at home, I tell everybody all day long, I'm not watching the draft, I'm not gonna do this. I sit at home, I watch the draft, and we pick people that I've never heard of. Yeah, sitting there, Emmanuel Ginobili. Who did we just pick? I was like, oh yeah, he's gonna be great. He's this. He's oh, okay, Pop. Whatever. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's great.
It was great to see them back together. Tim Duncan dressed up for
He's dressed.
I don't know about that haircut. Where's he going?
I don't know what that style is right there.
He's creating his own style.
Got a slick back going on. I see it, Timmy.
That's a lot of free time on your hands when you're going in. Like.
But a nice night. A nice night for Manu.
Yes, that organization, they deserve to. All the accolades, man, drafting the players, developing the players, keeping them together. Tremendous job. Congratulations.
Well deserved.
All right, now time for your AT&T wake-up call. Bryce Harper, Manny Machado both made their debuts for their new teams yesterday. And while both went hitless, both teams did win and both stars did get a lot of love from their new fans. Both do have a chance to redeem themselves tomorrow on FS1. Phillies will take on the Braves. Padres will take on the Giants. It all starts at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. And it is good to have some baseball back. It's going to get nicer out. Got some baseball to watch.
Exciting year in Major League Baseball. A lot of new names, big cash in different places. So we need the whole regular season to find out where all these guys are. The postseason will be amazing. Dodgers started off with the long ball yesterday. So glad to have baseball back.
See, it's not easy to live up to a $330 million contract. Nobody knows that more than not me. To football now. Houston defensive tackle Ed Oliver impressed at his pro day yesterday. Ran a 4.73 40 as a D tackle. It's like my kind of speed. See, how good could Oliver be in the pros?
Now, he can be good. The thing I'm worried about, he was the only 5-star player we saw not go to one of the Power 5 conferences where he went to Houston. He was an immediate star, freshman All-American. Buyer beware. This might be more of a workout warrior than a Pro Football Hall of Famer. I know all his numbers match up to what Aaron Donald did, but let me tell you what doesn't match up to Aaron Donald. Watch the game tape. He don't get to the quarterback and get guys on the ground. He don't move that fast when he has the offensive lineman in front of him. So, yes, tremendous athlete now. One of the best in the league immediately. But how good he is at defensive tackle? As my man Warren Sapp told me yesterday, Chris Carter, them shuttles don't tackle quarterbacks. I said, okay, Sapp Daddy, okay.
All right, moving along to college basketball. Zion Williamson and Duke will take on Virginia Tech in the NCAA tournament. Duke barely escaped last round with a last-second win over UCF. Twan, what are you expecting from Zion in this game?
Huge performance. They played 2 weeks ago. Zion didn't play. So got to understand Virginia Tech is going against a different animal tonight. Look for him to be really aggressive. He's playing terrific basketball right now. I like the Duke to take this game down.
Duke plays outstanding defense. They're the favorite to be able to win this, also to be able to win the tournament. Watch three-point shooting. How many points Duke get from the three-point line? How many points they get in the paint? I believe Zion has a big day against Tech.
Yeah, no taco in this one. All right, to the NBA. Joel Embiid had a dominant performance last night, scored 39 points, grabbed 13 boards in a win over the Nets. Swin, what's the most impressive part of Joel Embiid's game?
He's a problem, and he knows it. And he comes out every day and he shows it. Bottom line, I mean, he gave him 16 points in the first quarter. Somebody has to check him on the inside. It has to be done by committee. If not, he's going to give you 40 every night. And on 28 minutes, CeCe, 28 minutes.
I know, impressive. I think the answer to that, He's good and he knows it.
Yeah.
Attitude.
And what is it? And sometimes he comes out and shows it?
He sometimes comes out and shows it.
I like it. All right, finally, James Harden dropped 38 in a win over the Nuggets. Houston has now won 15 of their last 18. Antoine, any chance the Rockets break through and actually beat the Warriors this season?
They have the personnel and the confidence to do it. Obviously, the last couple of years, they have had the most success against this team. But I like where Houston's at right now. One, with James Harden, the way he's playing, we wondered if he was going to wear down towards the end of the season. He hasn't slowed down a bit. My one concern is Chris Paul. He's not at the level that he was last year before he got hurt, obviously, in the playoffs. They got to get Chris Paul back. And I know it's tough with six, seven games left, but he has to get to playing good basketball. And then they got some pieces that didn't play last night that we don't, let's not forget about. Kenneth Faried,
yes.
Get him back. He's going to be huge. Gerald Green, another guy who come off the bench and get him a spark plug. Austin Rivers, I thought, was a great pickup and he's played great basketball all season. They got the right ingredients to play Golden State.
Yeah, and then also I like Iman Shumpert. I like them picking him up because he's a guy defensively that'll get after you, fits right into the mold of Houston. But I'm not as worried about CP3 showing up come playoff time. I'm more worried about his health. I want him to be healthy going into the playoffs because we know last year they were just one injury away from, I think, taking that next step. So
yes.
The biggest thing for them right now is health. CP3 will be ready. And the thing that he gives Houston and why they could possibly knock off the Warriors, he takes the ball in his hands. He gets other guys involved. When James is out there, James is dominating the ball because he's a scorer. And we've seen how he's scored throughout this whole season so far. But when Chris has the ball, he gets all those other guys involved, and their game takes it to another level.
Do you think Chris Paul is more of a veteran savvy move where he's just trying to make it to the playoff, then he's going to hit that extra gear? Because that's what I seem to see. He's playing very reserved in the offense. James is predominantly the ball handler most of the offensive time. Is that what you see?
That's what I see. I think Chris is being very smart down the stretch, making sure that he's healthy, the guys are involved. But when he's needed to take over in certain games, he stepped up, and we've seen that.
I think, Tuan, the two questions I think we have going into the postseason for the Rockets is, one, can they win if Harden doesn't give you 30-plus every night? And two, you mentioned Shumpert, their defense. Can their defense hold up for the course of a series throughout the Western Conference playoffs?
I think they could avoid Golden State in that second round. You look at the standings right now, they're fourth. You want to see if you can get the three. If they can get the three and avoid them and get a couple series under their belt, they'll give them a better chance of matchup-wise, I believe. I think this Houston team is very deep. They got to figure out who's going to be in their rotation. The problem that Houston gives Golden State, they make everybody guard.
Yes.
On Golden State.
Yeah.
Steph Curry has to play defense because of Chris Paul. Obviously, now Boogie Cousins with Clint Capella, as good as he is picking and rolling and running the break, he'll be another guy that puts a lot of pressure on Boogie Cousins. So I think the matchups are the biggest thing when you think about Houston against Golden State. The only thing I'm not really big on, I think last year when Houston had an advantage, that home court advantage. I know they're very capable of going to Golden State and getting the win.
Right.
They've proven that. But I think that home court advantage, it's something about game 5 and 7. On your home floor. And I think that could be the difference of them getting past Golden State.
Now, Oracle, they've struggled in Oracle as far as Golden State this year. Now, will they have that? I don't believe they'll have that same attitude when it goes into the playoff. They've been dominant there. I think you make a great point as far as, man, if you do have home court advantage, that game 5, that game 7 could be the advantage. Last year, they didn't have Chris Paul in this. I like their defense, though, to your question, because they're one of two teams that's ranked in the top 5 offensively and defensively. The other team would be Utah. So they've come a long way as far as their defense from the beginning of the year. And since February the 23rd, they got the best record in the NBA at 15-3. So,
but they also had two defensive guys. You talked about Iman Shumpert and Kenneth Faried, two guys that play with a lot of energy and play on the defensive end, kind of make up for Trevor Ariza being gone.
Right, so I believe that they are gelling at the right time. They have added some key pieces, and they've given these guys confidence in the roles that they want them to play. Shumpert, Rivers, they're playing some of the better basketball that they've seen. I believe that Shumpert, when he gets to the playoffs, he will pay dividends because of the experience and because of that attitude that he brings to the team.
All right, let's move to the East now. Giannis, he left last night's game against the Clippers after re-aggravating that sprained ankle. Tough break for the guy trying to win his first MVP and lead the Bucks on an extended playoff push. It was reported Giannis clearly limping in the locker room after the game. When asked about it, he definitely had his concerns. Take a listen.
It's not going to be easy. It's usually when you sprain your ankle, you tweak your ankle, you stay out for 2, 3, 4 games. but I don't like missing games, so I got to work through it while playing and try to get my strength whenever I, you know, got practices and try to get my strength. And I think Laura is doing a great job, just helping me with that and get my mobility back. You know, we got 6 games left. Going to keep playing, try to play well. But I think the most important for this team is to stay healthy, you know, and get the guys that they've been out, get them back, and have them get back to the rhythm and prepare them for the playoffs. But for this group, I think the main focus is health. And as long as we stay healthy, we're going to be fine.
So it's a big deal for this Bucks team. What kind of impact could his injury have on the Bucks' title hopes?
Ooh, you talking about a team that wants to run to the playoffs? This is the team right here in the Bucks. The injury bug has bit them at the wrong time. Mm. It's not even only Giannis. We have Brogdon that's out. Miritich, I thought getting him in that trade, signing him was going to be big. Now he's out. Pau Gasol, who they picked up the last minute, thought that he helped them in the playoffs. He's out. I mean, DiVincenzo's out for the season, so they've had all these players already out, and you talk about your big gun, your MVP going down. This is kind of scary to me right now because his mobility is what makes him so good. The ankles, we know, you have to have the ability to change direction, whether it's defense, offense, and we know that everything with Giannis is going downhill, so he's going to have to get healthy really fast.
Well, if you got 6 games left, you got to basically pretty much shut him down and let him get healthy. You can't take a chance of going into the playoffs without him being 100%, so you got to shut him down. It's unfortunate he's in a midst of an MVP race. But I think more importantly, if you look at the standards, they're 4 games up.
Yep.
And then, you know, in the whole NBA. So you got to hope that your second unit, some of these other guys can step up, maybe get 2 out of 4 going into the playoffs where you can kind of still secure the number one seed throughout the playoffs. I think that's huge. This is the best home team in the league record-wise. So I think home court advantage is important for them, especially if you got hopes and aspirations of getting to the finals. You need to have home court advantage. You need any advantage when you're going against a team, possibly Golden State coming out the West. So I think this is huge. You shut him down. Unfortunately, you know, you would love for him to go out there. And like I said, he's in the middle of an MVP race. Hopefully he takes that out the equation and understand you're going for something a little bigger.
Yeah, I think the bigger goal is the most important thing. I don't know if I'm going to shut him down, but I'm definitely probably for the next 4 games, because I probably like him to play those last couple games where I might be able to get 1 or 2 of those other players to come back. But you mentioned it, man. Right now, what can prevent you from winning the championship? Golden State has had an unbelievable clean slate as far as when guys were injured. They were never stacked on each other where they had to deal with multiple injuries. That's part of their success the last 5 years. If Golden State is going, because I believe that Milwaukee is the best challenge for them from a roster standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, how they play ball consistently. But they can't do it without their full complement of players.
I can't, Chris. I'm not going to agree with the roster. I still think Toronto and Philly present a different problem than the
Golden State. I think they might present a different problem.
But the Ace, this only reason I shut them down and don't bring them back at all, it's going to be tough for them to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's going to be tough to get out the East. So you need them to be everybody to be 100%. Mm-hmm. You take a chance, he come back and retweak that ankle going in, then now you got to get him set back.
Okay.
Clearly, this is a nagging injury for him, and this is not something that'll just heal right away and you walk in and you're fine. Is there a way that he can adjust his game to protect the ankle and still manage to be effective, at least effective enough to help the Bucks' chances moving forward?
Well, I think the one thing right now that he has going for him is that medicine, technology, everything has advanced. So he will be in treatment 24 hours to be able to take care of this. They will throw everything that they can at him. But sometimes it's your body, how fast your body heals. And you don't – I agree with Twan on one thing. You don't want to come back too fast and go into the playoffs and you're not at 100%, because they're going to need him at 100%. Right now, there are other guys. Bledsoe's played unbelievable lately, so maybe he can pick up the slack. You have another all-star on the team. But, CeCe, I do agree with you on one thing. You like the idea of being back right before the playoffs, getting out 1 or 2 games, get yourself rolling a little bit. So we'll see what happens. Giannis isn't a guy that likes to sit, though.
What's plan B? What do you do if he isn't 100%? If he can't give you what we've seen from Giannis?
Well, if he's not 100%, he's like any other NBA player. Is he the LeBron James of the Eastern Conference? Because that's what we're going to see with Giannis. Yep. There were some times last year during the playoffs, he disappeared, especially on the road in 4th quarters. He disappeared. Now, if you are going to be that guy, if he's going to be the face of the NBA, there ain't no excuses. You play well with a sprained ankle. See, we don't know if he has that zero dark 30 LeBron thing. And that's what we should be waiting to see. So that's regardless. Ankle, that's regardless. Who's hurt? Because we didn't make no excuse for LeBron. Kyrie's hurt. Okay. Kevin Love's out.
Right.
Okay, Giannis, it's time for that. You are at the age. You've had a great regular season. Right now, he's the MVP. They're the best team in the league. What happens is plan B is I will play hurt, and that's what we expect out of our best players.
I was just watching him. I just got so caught up in seeing where his foot, because he stepped on him, and then that's when it rolled over. Okay, well, you guys already know that, and now I know it too, so we all know it. Thanks, guys. Coming up, can Cowboys make a Super Bowl run with their new look D-line? That is ahead on First Things First. Tomorrow, the season's biggest free agents hit the field with their new teams. Bryce Harper and the Phillies take on Freddie Freeman and the Braves. You got the Giants facing off against Manny Machado and the Padres. It all starts at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Back here with Coach Mangini and Brian Westbrook. Surprise news out of New England. Greg Schiano stepping down as New England defensive coordinator after having the job for less than 2 months. He said in a statement, quote, "This is not the result of any one event, but rather a realization that I need to spend more time on my faith and my family." See, I'll start with you. What was your reaction to this news?
Well, I had to call my guy yesterday, Urban Meyer, to find out what's the story with Greg. And he said he had talked to him yesterday. And it was a brief conversation. And Urban knows him very well because he hired him as his defensive coordinator, you know, after his stint there with Tampa Bay. But I believe that Greg has gone through a period a lot of coaches go through where they just keep coaching and they never give themselves time to recover. Because in 2011-12, he's one of the hottest coaches in pro football and college football. He leaves Rutgers, takes the job in Tampa Bay, has a bad stint there, has some bad stuff happen. He's got defensive linemen. When they're trying to run out the clock, he's got them jumping the snap, hitting guys and everything. The optics just were not good. And then he decided that, you know, I'm going to resurrect my career and go to Ohio State, take over one of their programs, run the best defense, top five in the defense a couple years in a row, gets one of the best jobs in the country, Tennessee. And then the Twitter mob got him. Someone released information saying that he was associated with the Penn State, and they took the job away from him before he could officially be announced as the head coach. And I believe since then, he has not recovered. He hadn't had time for his body to decompress, his brain to decompress, and he went right back into a pressure-packed situation. Urban Meyer, what he was going through at Ohio State, this year their defense was not good after dominating. They were 13-1, but the defense was one of the worst Ohio State's had the last 20 years. So I just think the pressure of it, analyzing, man, and went right back to coaching in another pressure situation that he took a look at and was like, wow, man, I need to really check myself, and that's what he did. I don't believe there's anything else to the story besides that. If there is, I'll be on it trying to find it out. But as of right now, that's what Urban Meyer, who happens to be one of his good friends, that's what he said, Coach.
And look, this position isn't for everybody. And
you're talking about the defense coordinator in New England.
In New England. It's not for everybody, and being on that staff isn't for everybody. And what makes this so difficult is when you go to a situation where there's an established defensive philosophy, the head coach is defensive-minded, and that's a little bit of an understatement, and you've got to go and try to learn that defense and execute that defense the way that they expect it to be, that makes it more challenging. And you don't have your people in place. Again, that's another layer of it. And when you've been a former head coach and you've had a lot of responsibility at your last job, and now you go into this job where you're a soldier. There's no officers club in New England. Sometimes that's a little bit difficult to deal with as well. And you may look at the whole body of work and say, I don't really want to do this for the next 12 months. Look, I've run long enough to know that I don't want to run a marathon. You know, like I that's not what I want to do. And sometimes you get that's in those situations and you realize this just isn't me. I know it's shocking. I know it is.
I was a little surprised.
What makes New England great, especially offensively, really, when we talked about this, Coach, offensively and defensively, is that they can go into a game and they'll change their entire defensive philosophy. We played them in the Super Bowl 04. We thought we were expecting a 3-4.
Yes.
They came out and played a 4-3 the entire game, threw us off of our entire game plan. That and Coach made this point. That philosophy, that culture that's willing to be able to change, a lot of coaches want to go in and say, this is what we are, this is what we do every single day. We're going to do this until we die. In New England, it's something different. It says, listen, we're going to be prepared. We're going to outwork everyone else. You're going to be in the office early. You're going to stay late because you have to be able to be multiple. The biggest three things in New England is great coaching, obviously starts at the top, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and then smart players being able to change things within. Yes. As for a coach, and I've never coached, but I can see it on their coaches' faces, You have to be in there and know everything to be able to coach in New England. That's a hard task to ask someone, especially if they only want to do one thing really, really good.
And with the players, when you have really smart players, they ask a lot of questions, and they ask why. And it's their right to do that, and you like that as a coach because you know that they're engaged, and you need to be able to give them really good answers. And when you're coaching a system that's not your system, sometimes you don't have those answers. Sometimes you don't know those answers, and now you're in a position that's a little bit insecure.
It's not a powerful position. And I know because I got offered to coach at a prominent college with a prominent coach with a really strong disposition. And things were going to have to be taught a certain way. Now, in my introduction to him, I was teaching the wide receivers a lot of things that were very different than anything he had ever seen. Now, I saw him gravitate to that. But when it came down to it, it was about teaching football a certain type of way. I know in my interview I was allowed to be flexible and coached away, but I didn't know if he was going to continue to allow that. So it's an unusual pressure to teach something that you're not an expert on. So you're not getting my best because I'm teaching his stuff to these kids, and I don't have the support because I don't have my other lieutenants to be able to be like, okay, this is what coach really means. So I thought it was going to be a tough task. There is no job at New England that's easy. And look at the last couple years. They lost their defensive signal caller. They hired Gerard Mayo as a linebacker coach, a guy who used to play with them. So they got a lot of inexperience on that staff defensively that we haven't seen in a long, long time.
Clearly all three of you know a little bit more of football than I do, about all of the football than I do. But is it that much different at other teams? I mean, what are the tangible differences between being a coordinator on the Patriots than what's expected of you when you walk into an NFL organization where you have to run a defense, even if the defensive philosophy is already in place?
It depends how you walk in. If you get to walk in and bring your system, and you get one or two of your guys who know the way that you want to teach things, the way that you expect things to be done, know the answers to the questions, then you've got a chance. And it's still hard in year one because you've got to get everybody on board. But as you walk in and you're the one that doesn't know the defense or doesn't know the system and you've got to learn it, but you're the expert and your group who is really smart and talented and successful knows those things, it's difficult. Now you've also got a head coach who's arguably one of the best defensive coaches or the best defensive coach in the history of the game as your boss. That adds another layer to this and another layer of pressure.
Yeah, it's just like from a philosophy standpoint. If Tony Dungy goes somewhere and you make him your defensive coordinator, you have to adopt Tony Dungy's philosophy. We're going to be undersized on the defense. We're going to be very fast. We're going to be flow to the ball. We're going to play a lot of cover two. We're not going to blitz a lot. Right. So I need a ball control offense. But when you lose that control, Shiano doesn't have control what we're going to rush. He don't have control if we're going to play a 34. At Ohio State, he had access to recruit the best players in the world, coached them however he wanted to, because Urban Meyer, that's the reason why he brought him there. If I want to rush, if I want to play a 34, I can play a 34. I want to play a 40. If I want to be a multiple, you can't do that when you inherit the New England, that defensive coordinator job.
Hey, Brian, so let's look ahead to the Patriots defense as it is right now. What do you make of what they're going to have, and what do you expect to see from them going into next season?
I don't think anything changes. Again, the offense and the personnel as far as Tom Brady being there, that's the big part of the team. You add, of course, Bill Belichick there. But it's all for them, and it's been this way for a long time. You input different pieces into the same machine. You get these guys that can do the same thing. They're smart. They can be multiple. You can change things on the fly. You can change things on Sunday morning, the day of the game, and they find a way to get it work, get it done. It's all about Bill Belichick and his staff. It starts at the top and flows all the way.
I'm still concerned about the defense. If you look at the number of coaches that have left there in the last couple of years, Matt Patricia going to Detroit. Every time you lose one of your guys, he's going to take three or four people in the building. We can't see the collateral damage, but you can start to see the offensive productivity starting to slow down. The defense wasn't dominant, and did they play well as a team? But every time we have the defensive coordinator this year going to Miami, he took three or four people out the door. Ultimately, you can run out of lieutenants. Like, you start losing people from your tree. And at this point in the offseason, March, there ain't no good defensive coordinator available. Only one available is he's on TV. And Bill ain't calling him, and that's Coach Mangini. Coach Mangini could do it. He can run the defenses without me talking to him. But there aren't great coaches out there on the sideline at this time of the year that you can just go out and pluck and be like, oh, yeah, let's come. It's the New England way. No, it does not work that way.
I think they have a chance.
Not to put you in a bad position, Coach.
No, not at all. With Brett.
Yeah, I prefer you here. You guys can't
wait for the next 2 years. What are you doing? Yeah.
They've got Brett Bielema, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, on the staff, and he was there last year. So at least he understands how things operate. And he was a head coach for a long time, but he could potentially transition that role. What about Steven Belichick? He's a safeties coach. Put him in that position. He's 32 years old. Guys are getting head coaching jobs at 32. Why can't he coach the defense? There's not going to be anybody that Bill's more vested in than Steven's success. And I can see that potentially happening as well. And Brian Belichick is on the staff. Mm. Also, there could be a transitioning. Maybe that's the next phase of the family business.
All right. Break it there. Guys, stick around. Take a break. Coming up. Will Giannis's injury impact the MVP race? That's next. First things first. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started right here on First Things First. You can catch it on Monday through Friday only on FS1. We're back here with Swin Cash. We're playing Drawing a Blank. Wait, do you want to play Drawing a Blank, Swin?
I love to play.
Then let's do it. Last night, Giannis hurt his ankle when he stepped on Garrett Temple's foot. However, Giannis has led the books to an NBA best 57 wins so far this season. CC, the MVP this season should be blank.
You got to go with the guy's team going to win 60 games. Coach Bud and what they've done there, best player on the best team, having the best season of his career. His stats are phenomenal. I think the leading the NBA in unassisted dunks getting in the paint, it talks about how he's elevated his overall dribbling skills. He's put on that 15 pounds of bulk, Jenna, that you're always gushing
Love
over.
It.
Ooh, Giannis got muscles. Ooh.
Very muscular Swin.
So she is into that. Giannis, MVP.
I'm going to have to go with CeCe. I agree that Giannis is the MVP. And the reason why is when he's giving you 27 points and 13 rebounds a game, those numbers are unbelievable. But think about this. In the offseason, he said he wanted to be MVP, called Kobe Bryant up on the phone. He said, I ain't working out with you other guys. I'm going to do me. And he's doing him this year.
Oh, I like
it. His team number one overall seed right now in the regular season. And, I mean, you have to think about it. Who else besides him would be MVP? It'd be James Harden. He had an unbelievable season, but his team is not the number one overall right now.
All right, you're both in on Giannis. Moving on, Coach of the Year. Mike Budenholzer led the aforementioned Bucks to their most wins since 1986, but Doc Rivers has also done a great job keeping the Clippers alive out west, and Mike Malone has the Nuggets in contention for the one seed. Swin, in your opinion, the Coach of the Year should be blank.
There's a lot of people that could be up for the Coach of the Year, a lot of teams that have done well, but I have to give it to Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers has his team right now, won 9 out of 10, and they came in this season, picked 11th to win. They are in the playoffs right now, sitting comfortably with a number 6 seed. Could go up a little bit higher. Clippers right now looking good. Doc Rivers, my Coach of the Year.
I can always co-sign for Doc. What he's done at the trade deadline, we thought they were tanking.
Oh, yeah.
They're getting ready for the lottery pick. But Doc said, no, sir. Predicted only win 33 games. A great vote there. But what they're doing in Milwaukee with the best record. Coach Bud, people thought. Nick Wright told me, man, Coach Bud's going to bring Giannis's game. I said, I believe Coach Bud is one of the better coaches. Underrated where he was. He's elevated this staff. Look how they play basketball. Look at their defensive end, how they've elevated that, and how he's helped change those couple roster moves has really elevated this team. I'm going with Coach Bud.
You mentioned that the Clippers came in at the 11th seed. You know who's in the 11th seed now? The Lakers.
Oh,
funny,
yeah. And they second, they're stepkids in that building, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. There you go. This year, NBA's rookie class has two elite standouts in Luka Doncic and Trae Young. In NBA history, Luka's stat line is only rivaled by Oscar Robinson's rookie year back in 1961. On the flip side, Trae Young is the first rookie since Allen Iverson to average 18 points, 7 dimes. Swin, the rookie of the year should be blank.
Should be Luka Doncic. He started out the season unbelievable and has sustained it throughout. This kid is putting up numbers. Came into the NBA with a grown man's game. His poise, his patience, his ability to get to the basket. I mean, he's unbelievable. Giving you a triple-double, this is the guy right now that's rookie of the year for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you with Luka. Nick's been on Luka's bandwagon since last year, watching those grainy little European things. He's been better than we expected. You mentioned a couple people. LeBron James, He's been the best since LeBron James, Oscar Robertson, 61. Those are iconic names. Luka is the best. Trey has been phenomenal, especially playing in Atlanta. Atlanta's a tough spot now. I had a little young lady almost funked out of college going to Atlanta, going back and forth on Delta. Now, Atlanta is tough.
You know that.
Tough on a brother. Swin, don't answer.
Glad that we know that information. Let's look forward. The Warriors are still the team to beat in the NBA. Many expect them to turn it up another level when the playoffs start. So you see, the team best equipped to knock off the Warriors this season is blank.
I'm going to say this, and I know I got a couple injuries that I'm just hoping that they're able to heal. I'm going with the Milwaukee Bucks. I believe that their overall length that they provide, I believe that Golden State doesn't have an answer for Giannis off the bounce. I believe him and KD would be a great matchup. And I believe that the person that makes the difference, Brook Lopez, being able to bring the five out to the five and shoot that three-pointer on a regular basis, Milwaukee Bucks, to me, they give the Warriors fits.
For me, I'm going to go with the Raptors. And they're a team that who thought after Masai made that trade with DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, all of a sudden the Raptors are right there with the potential to actually take, oh, if the Bucks start losing a couple games, they could probably possibly get that number one seed. Mm-hmm. Kawhi Leonard's been unbelievable. They really managed his minutes out there on the floor, but they play well as a team. Sixth man of the year, Siakam, I think he will get it for them. He's playing well. They have the pieces right there.
All right, moving on. James Harden has scored 183 points in clutch time this season, most in the NBA. Kemba, Kawhi, Kyrie, and Paul George round out the top five. CC, the player you'd want to take the last shot in a playoff game for your team?
Probably in the guy that's gotten the most criticism the last several years, and that's Kevin Durant. He's the most efficient scorer I've ever seen in the NBA who can play at a high level. You can't block his shot at 7 foot from 27 feet on in. He can get anywhere on the court to be able to score. Yeah, Harden, he's got to have 10 dribbles. He's got to have a pick. KD doesn't need that. And KD does not take bad shots. Great free throw shooter. So, KD, if I got one shot and I need a guy to get me a bucket, KD's my guy.
I have to agree with you on that one. You got to put the ball in KD's hand. Right now, he's arguably one of the best, if not the best player in the NBA. His ability to get to the basket, his ability to shoot from the outside, he can do a little bit of everything, and he's a hard guard for anybody.
All right, Swin. Was it fun?
Yeah, it was fun. Ah, that was easy.
Better
I thought you had more questions for me.
We do. We'll do them in the commercial break, though. Thanks, Swin. Coming up, why does Antonio Brown have the rest of the league nervous? That's next on First Things First. Here with Antoine Walker, we are going viral, Twan. Last night, Luka Doncic and Goran Dragic faced off for the first time in the NBA. The two are good friends. Both play on the Slovenia national team, obviously. Reportedly, 2,000 fans from Slovenia were in attendance to watch the two play. Check this out. That was great. Remember when Giannis came out and there were a bunch of fans from Greece that came down and he had the whole, he had everyone in the contingency just screaming and yelling? That's what it reminded
me. Man, that's a nice little trip there, man. To South Beach, Miami.
That's a great trip. I feel like that's when I go back home and Chicago on the south side.
Good stuff.
Yeah, they're shouting stuff.
Yeah, they ain't doing that.
Yeah, they shouting stuff. Okay.
Thank you for translating. I'm always usually lost on this set, Antoine, and now someone actually brought me with them. Time for your AT&T wake-up call. James Harden dropped 38 points in a win over the Nuggets. Houston has now won 15 of its last 18. CeCe, any chance the Rockets break through, maybe beat the Warriors this season? They came close last year.
Well, this is the thing, and you got to give them credit as far as revamping this roster. They're not playing the style they played at with last year. They're playing more with Harden, dominating the basketball. That style's been effective. Since January 23rd, they're the best team in the NBA. So I think they're in the right position, but more importantly, Chris Paul is healthy, and if he can be healthy when they face the Warriors, that gives them the best chance.
And they did a good job of adding pieces to this team after losing a couple key pieces, adding Amon Shepard, adding Kenneth Faried, Austin Rivers.
Yes.
Got the roster back as talented as it was last year. They got a legitimate shot of taking on the Golden State Warriors.
All right, moving on. Giannis left last night's game against the Clippers after re-aggravating that sprained ankle. Tough break for the guy trying to win his first MVP and lead the Bucks on an extended playoff push. Antoine, will this sidetrack the Bucks' title hopes?
A little bit. Obviously, you want to make sure he's 100% going into the playoffs. So you got six games left. You got a little cushion. You got a four-game lead as the best record in the league. So that gives you a little sigh of relief. But they need to get him back 100%. He's a rhythm player. He plays above the rim. So you got to make sure that ankle's 100%.
Yeah, it's probably this is their third or fourth injury. Paul Gasol, he's injured. Brogdon, their most important, their starting guard, he's injured with that plantar injury. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. You don't need Giannis. You need Giannis to be healthy. I think they should rest him for at least the next week, last couple games. If he's healthy enough, try to get him at least one or two games before the playoffs start.
All right, let's stick in the East. Joel Embiid had a dominant performance last night. He scored 39 points, grabbed 13 boards in a win over the Nets. Antoine, what's the most impressive part of Joel Embiid's game?
One is size, his ability to put the ball on the floor, shoot the three, array of moves. Could arguably be one of the top three centers of all time because we've never seen a skill set by a big man like this in a long time. You should look at Hakeem Olajuwon and be like, oh, he was terrific. But this guy here has a different skill set. His ability to do so many things on the court is unbelievable.
Yeah, most impressive thing, Jenna, when he's been on the court, he's so consistent. He's got 27 games this year where he scores 30 points and grabs 10 rebounds, best in the NBA. That right there, been able to do it at a high level because we thought that he was nice in the post. We didn't know he could score as much as he can score. Like, typically, a big man, if he's really good, he's going to get you 17 to 22. We don't see big man being one of the top five scorers in the NBA. One day, he could potentially lead the NBA in scoring. That part right there is impressive.
Let's talk about sex. Good sex. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code FTF. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code FTF to try it free. That's Frank Thomas Frank. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
All right, finally, the Celtics are taking on the Pacers tonight. Could very well be a preview of the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. The Celtics have struggled recently, winning only one of their last five games. Antoine, do you trust Kyrie Irving and this team with the playoffs right around the corner?
Not right now. It's tough to say that you trust them. They're not playing good basketball. Got off the snide the other night with Kyrie sitting out against Cleveland. But tonight is going to be a huge game to see where they're at, a team they're going to have to face possibly in the first round. They lost 12 games at home, so I believe that, I'm not saying that the home court is that important,
right?
Because they haven't been great at home. But this will see the rotation, see who's going to be the great best matchups for them going against the Pacers. So, and they also play, this is, they're going to play them over an eight-day period twice. So this would be huge for them to see where they at going to the Pacers, if they can see if they can match up really well them to get an advance.
Yeah, this question, I have to separate it. And I have to separate the Celtics from Kyrie. So two questions. Do I trust Kyrie? I trust Kyrie. I cuss the Celtics. Now, I know Kyrie is on the Celtics, and the Celtics don't play as good as basketball. Their system is not as efficient when he's on there. But Kyrie is having a career year. It's not his fault that his style is at conflict with Brad Stevens and what he wants to do. It's not his fault that the other players have not grown in their second year. It's not his fault that Gordon Hayward, you know, did not bounce back from the injury and is not as explosive, hadn't been consistent. Like, those things, but when you're the best player and you're a potential free agent, and then some of his answers to some of the other questions, I could see why people would blame him. But I believe Kyrie is going to have one of the better playoffs that he's had, because he's going to be sending a message. Now, does that lead to the Celtics playing their best basketball? I don't believe that their system will allow both those things to happen.
This kind of reminds me, and it's not that we had some injuries, but after we won a championship, the second to this, when we was trying to repeat, we kind of cruised through the season. Shaq missed 30-plus games. D-Wade was out. And we won 44 games. But the problem with that is that we were not a very good basketball team. We thought we were going to be able to turn it on because of our championship pedigree. After we won it the year before, we thought we could just turn it on. The roster was pretty much the same. We came back with the same guys, and we got swept by the Chicago Bulls. I mean, they kicked our butts in the first round of the playoff series. It's not the kind of, I wouldn't put it as that bad with Boston. I think they have the ability to win in the first round series, but you can't just turn it on come playoff time.
Right.
Don't you think the Celtics can look to what the Pacers did this year and say, hey, that was us last year. Great complimentary basketball without their star player, but just doing it without a lot of drama, without a lot of noise, quietly making their way through the Eastern Conference. It seems like maybe they can take something out of this game tonight on what it's like for them to do, you know, for the Pacers to be doing basically what the Celtics did last year on their push to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a good story. But I don't believe that either their front office or their coach is going to point to the Pacers and try to use them as an example, because you're in real time. Man, Terry Rozier wants to play more. He wants a big-time contract. Kyrie is thinking about where he's going to go this offseason. Gordon Hayward's still not getting any better, and he's still getting those minutes. Jaylen Brown, man, one day him and Tatum, they want a max deal. So all these things, yeah, Indiana, great story there. Great story with the Pacers. The Celtics did have that last year, but it's hard to believe for Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward to join this young, talented team and for them to be like, hey, man, it's our fault. Like, the team's not as good this year with us. So I don't think that will be their perspective going into this series or these games, last couple games with the Pacers.
So then my follow-up would be, why has it been so hard for Kyrie to why has he been struggling with leadership so much this season? Why has that been so tough for him?
Well, sometimes, you know, you can bite off more than you can chew. And you got to remember this. You also got to remember, Cleveland is different than Boston when it comes to media. I played 7.5 years in Boston. That's a different animal when it comes to the media. I got Bob Ryan covering me, Jackie McMullen.
Icons in the business.
That have been around a long time, but that don't give you a break. I think now with social media, with the internet, it's different. And then Kyrie's getting asked the tough questions. You used to have LeBron James in that corner.
A little buffer.
You had LeBron James with 40 cameras in his face, and then you get to 10. Now you got the 40 in your face, and a lot of guys are not ready for that and don't understand that. When you play in major market cities where the local media, the radio stations are on you every day and watching your every move, you got to be prepared to answer those questions, and he was not prepared this year.
Yeah, and everyone, like a lot of times, and I believe that Kyrie and KD are put in this in the same light. It was a lot like Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch was not good with the camera. He did not feel comfortable, didn't want to do interviews, got a lot of fines, and really had a lot of negative publicity. Good football player, great in the locker room, guys love him, but we think that all these athletes are cookie cutter. All of them are going to do an interview like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan with a suit on, tie on, he's not sweating. Like, he was the first athlete that I ever saw that, man, he's got it all together. He's not win, lose. He remains calm after the game. He's never upset. And I asked Mike about it, and he was like, that's the image that I want to be able to give people. We don't give athletes that opportunity now. Now they have to have everything together. All their answers have to be correct, like Russell Wilson. You ask Russell a tough question. Russell, hey, man, love my teammates. Man, we're going to try it. You know, we lost that one. Going to look at it. Going to look at the film. Going to try to get better. All these guys, KD, man, he's guilty of that from the public. Kyrie is, they're not bad guys, but as far as mastering the press conference and all that and trying to be a leader, like, sometimes we put that leadership on our greatest players, and sometimes they don't want to lead. They just want to follow, and that's what I think I saw this year with Kyrie.
So aren't you worried then if Kyrie does come to New York? There's no bigger place for media scrutiny than here in New York.
Oh, but yeah, you got to worry, especially if he's going to be 1A. But, you know, they have room for get two max guys. If he goes with a KD, not saying KD, but if you go with another guy that can kind of take that pressure off you, when you look at the Boston roster, they got good pieces on their team. They don't have another big personality on their team just yet.
Yes.
So, you know, he goes to New York, it's going to be just as tough as it was in Boston. He got to be prepared for
that. I think the New York in the staff that they have there from the front office and what they're trying to do, Scott Perry. I think that they'll put some buffers out there. Also, understanding with Fizdale, I know the personality of these two stars. Fizdale was with Dwayne Wade, with LeBron and them. You can be a buffer. Like Danny Ainge, they could help Kyrie and them out in these types of situations, realizing that's what Golden State's done. Now when Kevin Durant says something, like, hey, it's not that big of a deal because they got Steph there. They got Klay there. They have other guys that are able to buff that message. And I believe the Knicks, if we have both of them here in the city, I believe the Knicks in their front office will have those types of things in place.
Sure make for a good time. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.